Chapter 3. Haroon had already smelled unhappiness on the night air, and this sudden mist positively stank of sadness and gloom. "We should have stayed at home," he thought. "No shortage of long faces there." "Pooh!" shouted Rashid Khalifa's voice through the greeny yellow mist. "Who made that smell? Come on, admit." "It's the mist," Haroon explained. "It's a mist of misery." But at once Snooty Batu's voice cried out, "Lenient Mr. Rashid, it seems the boy wants to cover up his stink-making with inventions. I fear he is too much like the folk of this foolish valley, crazy for make-believe. What I must put up with. My enemies hire cheap fellows to stuff the people's ears with bad stories about me, and the ignorant people just lap it up like milk. For this reason I have turned, eloquent Mr. Rashid, to you. You will tell happy stories, praising stories, and the people will believe you and be happy and vote for me." No sooner had Batu uttered these words than a harsh, hot wind blew across the lake. The mist had dispersed, but now the wind burned into their faces, and the waters of the lake became choppy and wild. "It's not in the least dull, this lake," exclaimed Haroon. "In fact, it's positively temperamental." As the words left his lips, a penny dropped. "This must be the Moody Land," he burst out. Now, the tale of the Moody Land was one of Rashid Khalifa's best-loved stories. It was the story of a magical country that changed constantly according to the moods of its inhabitants. In the Moody Land, the sun would shine all night if there were enough joyful people around, and it would go on shining until the endless sunshine got on their nerves. Then an irritable night would fall, a night full of mutterings and discontent, in which the air felt too thick to breathe. And when people got angry, the ground would shake, and when people were muddled or uncertain about things, the Moody Land got confused as well. The outlines of its buildings and lampposts and motor cars got smudgy, like paintings whose colors had run, and at such times it could be difficult to make out where one thing ended and another began. "Am I right?" Haroon asked his father. "Is this the place the story was about?" It made sense. Rashid was sad, so the mist of misery enveloped the swan boat. And Snooty Batu was so full of hot air that it wasn't surprising he'd conjured up this boiling wind. "The Moody Land was only a story, Haroon," Rashid replied. "Here were someplace real." When Haroon heard his father say, "Only a story," he understood that the Shah of Blah was very depressed indeed, because only deep despair could have made him say such a terrible thing. Rashid, meanwhile, was arguing with Snooty Batu. "Surely you don't want me to just tell sugar and spice tales," he protested. "Not all good stories are of that type. People can delight in the saddest of sob stuff, as long as they find it beautiful." Snooty Batu flew into a rage. "Nonsense, nonsense," he shrieked. "Terms of your engagement are crystal clear. For me, you will please to provide upbeat sagas only. None of your gloompuss yarns. If you want pay, then just be gay." At once the hot wind began to blow with redoubled force, and as Rashid sank into silent wretchedness, the greeny yellow mist with the toilet stink came rushing toward them across the lake. And the water was angrier than ever, slopping over the side of the swan boat and rocking it alarmingly from side to side, as if it were responding to Batu's fury, and also, in point of fact, to Haroon's growing anger at Batu's behavior. The mist enfolded the swan boat once again, and once again Haroon couldn't see a thing. What he heard were sounds of panic, the uniformed oarsmen crying out, "Oh, oh, down we go!" and the infuriated shrieks of Snooty Batu, who seemed to take the weather conditions as a personal insult. And the more shrieks and yelps there were, the rougher the waters became, and the hotter and more violent the wind. Flashes of lightning and rolls of thunder lit up the mist, creating weird, neon-like effects. Haroon decided there was nothing for to it but to put his Moody Land theory into practice. "Okay," he shouted into the mist. "Everybody listen. This is very important. Everybody just stop talking. Not a word. Zip the lips. Dead silence is very important. On the count of three. One, two, three." A new note of authority had come into his voice, which surprised him as much as anyone, and as a result, the oarsmen and Batu, too, obeyed him without a murmur. At once, the boiling breeze fell away. The thunder and lightning stopped. Then Haroon made a conscious effort to control his irritation at Snooty Batu, and the waves calmed down the instant he cooled off. The smelly mist, however, remained. "Just do one thing for me," Haroon called to his father. "Just this one thing. Think of the happiest times you can remember. Think of the view of the Valley of Kay we saw when we came through the Tunnel of Eye. Think about your wedding day, please." A few moments later, that malodorous mist tore apart like the shreds of an old shirt and drifted away on a cool night breeze. The moon shone down once more upon the waters of the lake. "You see," Haroon told his father, "it wasn't only a story, after all." Rashid actually laughed out loud in delight. "You're a blinking good man in a tight spot, Haroon Khalifa," he said with an emphatic nod. "Hats off to you." "Gullible Mr. Rashid," cried Snooty Batu. "Surely you don't believe the lad's hocusing and pocusing. Freak weather conditions came and then went. No more to be said." Haroon kept his feelings about Mr. Batu to himself. He knew what he knew, that the real world was full of magic, so magical worlds could easily be real. The houseboat was called Arabian Nights Plus One, because, as Mr. Batu boasted, even in all the Arabian Nights, you will never have a night like this. Each of its windows had been cut out in the shape of a fabulous bird, fish, or beast. The rock of Sinbad the sailor, the whale that swallowed men, a fire-breathing dragon, and so on. Light blazed out through the windows so that the fantastic monsters were visible from some distance and seemed to be glowing in the dark. Haroon followed Rashid and Mr. Batu up a wooden ladder onto the veranda of intricately carved wood and into a living room with crystal chandeliers and throne-like seats with ornately brocaded cushions and walnut tables carved to look like flat-topped trees in which you could see tiny birds and also what looked like winged children but were, of course, fairies. The walls were lined with shelves full of leather-bound volumes. But most of these turned out to be fakes, concealing drinks cabinets and broom cupboards. One shelf, however, bore a set of real books written in a language Haroon could not read and illustrated with the strangest pictures he had ever seen. "Erudite Mr. Rashid," Batu was saying, "you and your line of work will be interested in these. Here, for your delectation and edification, is the entire collection of the tales known as the Ocean of the Streams of Story. It will, if you ever run out of material, you will find plenty in here." "Run out? What are you saying?" Rashid wildly asked, suddenly fearful that Batu had known all along about the terrible events in the town of G. But Batu patted him on the shoulder. "Touchy, Mr. Rashid, it was only a joke, a passing lightness, a cloud blown away by the breeze. Of course, we await your recital with full confidence." But Rashid was down in the dumps again. It was time to call it a day. The uniformed boatman showed Rashid and Haroon to their bedrooms, which turned out to be even more opulent than the lounge. In the exact center of Rashid's room stood an enormous painted wooden peacock. With little flourishes of the arms, the boatman removed its back to reveal a large and comfortable bed. Haroon had the adjoining room, in which he found an equally outsized turtle, which likewise became a bed when the boatman removed its shell. Haroon felt a little peculiar at the notion of sleeping on a turtle whose shell had been removed, but remembering his manners, he said, "Thank you, it is very pleasant." "Very pleasant?" hooted Snooty Batu from the doorway. "Inappropriate young person, you are aboard Arabian Nights Plus One. Very pleasant does not cover it at all. Admit, in the very least, that it is all super marveloso, incredible, and wholly fantastique." Rashid gave Haroon a look that said, "We should have thrown this fellow into the lake while we had the chance," and interrupted Batu's screeches. "It is, as Haroon stated, very pleasant indeed. Now we will sleep. Good night." Batu stalked off to the swan boat in a great huff. If people have no taste, was his parting shot, the best things are a waste. Tomorrow, unappreciative Mr. Rashid, is your turn. Let us see how very pleasant your audience finds you. That night, Haroon found it difficult to get to sleep. He lay on the turtle's back in his favorite long nightshirt, bright red with purple patches, and tossed and turned, and just as he was about to drop off at long last, he was woken up completely by noises from Rashid's room next door, a creaking and a rumbling and a groaning and a mumbling and then a low cry. It's no use, I won't be able to do it. I'm finished for good. Haroon tiptoed to the connecting door and very carefully opened it just a crack and peeped. He saw the Shah of Blah in a plain blue nightshirt, without any purple patches at all, pacing miserably around his peacock bed, muttering to himself, while the floorboards creaked and moaned. Only praising tales, indeed. I am the ocean of notions, not some office boy for them to boss about. But no, what am I saying? Oh, I'll get up on stage and find nothing in my mouth but arcs. Then they'll slice me in pieces. It'll be all up with me, finito. Khatam Shad. Much better to stop fooling myself, give it all up, go into retirement, cancel my subscription, because the magic's gone forever, ever since she left. Then he turned to stare at the connecting door and called loudly, "Who's there?" And so there was nothing for it. Haroon had to say, "It's me. I couldn't sleep. I think it's the turtle," he added. "It's just too weird." Rashid nodded gravely. "It's a funny thing, but I've been having trouble with this peacock myself. For me, a turtle would be better. How do you feel about the bird?" "Definitely better," Haroon admitted. "A bird sounds okay." So Haroon and Rashid exchanged bedrooms. And that was why the water genie, who visited Arabian Nights Plus One that night and crept into the peacock room, found an unsleeping boy of about his own size staring him in the face. To be precise, Haroon had just dozed off when he was woken by a creaking and a rumbling and a groaning and a mumbling. So his first thought was that his father hadn't found the turtle any easier to sleep on than the peacock. Then he realized that the noise wasn't coming from the turtle room, but from his own bathroom. The bathroom door was open and the light was on, and as Haroon watched, he saw silhouetted in the open doorway a figure almost too astonishing for words. It had an outsized onion for a head and outside aubergines for legs, and it was holding a toolbox in one hand and what looked like a monkey wrench in the other. A burglar. Haroon tiptoed toward the bathroom. The being was talking nonstop in a mumbling, grumbling way. "Put it in, take it out. The fellow comes up here, so I have to come and install it. Rush job, never mind my workload. Then wham bam, he cancels his subscription. And guess who has to come back and take the equipment out? Right away, pronto. You'd think there was a fire. Now where did I put the blasted thing? Has somebody been meddling? Can't trust anybody anymore. Okay, let's be methodical. Hot tap, cold tap, go halfway in between. Go up in the air 6 inches, and there should be your story tap. So where's it gone? Who's pinched it? Whoops, what's this? Is that where you are? Thought you could hide from me, but I've got you now. Okay, time to disconnect." While this remarkable monologue was being delivered, Haroon Khalifa moved his head very, very slowly until half an eye was looking around the door jamb into the bathroom, where he saw a small, ancient-looking man, no bigger than himself, wearing a huge purple turban on his head. That was the onion. And baggy silk pajamas gathered at the ankles. Those were the aubergines. This little fellow sported an impressive full set of whiskers of a most unusual color, the palest, the most delicate shade of sky blue. Haroon had never seen blue hair before and leant forward a little in curiosity. Whereupon, to his horror, the floorboard on which he stood emitted a loud, unarguable creak. The bluebeard whirled about, spun all the way round 3 times, and disappeared. But in his haste, he let the monkey wrench fall from his hand. Haroon dashed into the room, grabbed it, and held it close. slowly in what seemed like a most disgruntled fashion, though it was hard for Haroon to be sure of this, as he'd never seen anyone materializing before. The little Bluebeard reappeared in the bathroom. "No kidding, enough's enough, party's over, fair is fair," he snapped. "Give it back." "No," replied Haroon. "The disconnector," the other pointed. "Hand it over, return to sender, restore to rightful owner, give up, yield, surrender." Now Haroon noticed that the tool he held was more like a monkey wrench than the Bluebeard's head was like an onion. In other words, it had the general outline of a wrench, but it was somehow more fluid than solid, and it was made up of thousands of little veins flowing with differently colored liquids, all held together by some unbelievable, invisible force. It was beautiful. "You're not getting it back," Haroon said firmly, "until you tell me what you're doing here. Are you a burglar? Shall I call the cops?" "Mission impossible to divulge," the little man sulked. "Top secret classified, eyes only info. Certainly not to be revealed to smarty pants boys in red nightshirts with purple patches who snatch what isn't theirs and then accuse other people of being thieves." "Very well," Haroon said, "then I'll wake my father." "No," said the Bluebeard sharply. "No adults. Rules and regulations. Totally forbidden. More than my job's worth. Oh, I knew this would be a terrible day." "I'm waiting," said Haroon severely. The little fellow drew himself up to his full height. "I am the water genie. If," he said crossly, "from the ocean of the streams of story." Haroon's heart thumped. "Are you trying to claim you're really one of those genies my father told me about?" "Supplier of story water from the great story sea," the other bowed. "Precisely the same, none other. It is I. However, I regret to report the gentleman no longer requires the service, has discontinued narrative activities, thrown in the towel, packed it in. He has canceled his subscription. Hence my presence for purposes of disconnection. To which end, please to return my tool." "Not so fast," said Haroon, whose head was spinning, not only at the discovery that there really were water genies, that the great story sea wasn't only a story, but also at the revelation that Rashid had quit, given up, buttoned his lip. "I don't believe you," he said to the genie, "if." "How did he send the message? I've been right with him almost the entire time." "He sent it by the usual means," if shrugged. "A P2C2E. "And what is that?" "Obvious," said the water genie with a wicked grin. "It's a process too complicated to explain." And then he saw how upset Haroon was and added, "In this case, it involves thought beams. We tune in and listen to his thoughts. It's an advanced technology." "Advanced or not," Haroon retorted, "you've made a mistake this time. You're up the spout. You've got the wrong end of the stick." He heard himself beginning to sound like the water genie and shook his head to clear it. "My father has definitely not given up. You can't cut off his story water supply." "Orders," said If. "All queries to be taken up with the Grand Comptroller." "Grand Comptroller of what?" Haroon wanted to know. "Of the processes too complicated to explain, of course, at P2C2E House, Gup City, Kahani. All letters to be addressed to the Walrus." "Who's the Walrus?" "Oh, you don't concentrate, do you?" If replied. "At P2C2E House in Gup City, there are many brilliant persons employed, but there is only one Grand Comptroller. They are the Eggheads. He is the Walrus. Got it now? Understood?" Haroon absorbed all this information. "And how does a letter get there?" he asked. The water genie giggled softly. "It doesn't," he answered. "You see the beauty of the scheme." "I certainly don't," Haroon retorted. "And anyway, if you do not turn off your story water, my father will still be able to tell stories." "Anybody can tell stories," If replied. "Liars and cheats and crooks, for example. But for stories with that extra ingredient, for those, even the best storytellers need story waters. Storytelling needs fuel, just like a car. If you don't have the water, you just run out of steam." "Why should I believe a word you say?" Haroon argued, "when I can't see anything in this bathroom except for a perfectly ordinary bath, toilet, basin, and some perfectly ordinary taps marked cold and hot." "Feel here," said the water genie, pointing to a patch of empty air 6 inches above the basin. "Take the disconnecting tool and just tap it against the space where you imagine nothing to be." Dubiously suspecting a trick, and only after instructing the water genie to stand well back, Haroon did as he was told. Ding! Went the disconnecting tool as it struck something extremely solid and extremely invisible. "There she blows!" cried the water genie, grinning widely. "The story tap! Voila!" "I still don't get it," Haroon frowned. "Where is this ocean of yours, and how does the story water get into this invisible tap? How does the plumbing work?" He saw the wicked glint in If's eye and answered his own question with a sigh. "Oh, don't tell me, I know. By a process too complicated to explain." "Bullseye," said the water genie. "Got it in one, 10 out of 10, spot on." Now Haroon Khalifa made a decision that would prove to be the most important decision of his life. "Mr. If," he said politely but firmly, "you must take me to Gup City to see the walrus so I can get this stupid blunder about my father's water supply reversed before it's too late." If shook his head and spread his arms wide. "Impossible," he said. "No can do. It's off the menu. Don't even dream about it. Access to Gup City in Kahani by the shores of the ocean of the streams of story is strictly restricted, completely forbidden, 100% banned, except to accredited personnel, like, for instance, me. But you? No chance, not in a million years. No way, Jose." "In which case," Haroon said sweetly, "you'll just have to go back without this." And here he waved the disconnecting tool in the Bluebeard's face. "And see how they like that." There was a long silence. "Okay," said the water genie. "You've got me banged to rights. It's a done deal. Let's make tracks. Scram. Vamoos. I mean, if we're going, let's go." Haroon's heart sank rapidly towards his toes. "You mean," he stammered, "now?" "Now," said If. Haroon took a slow, deep breath. "All right then," he said. "Now."